This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Your source for Pan-African news and world developments, I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The Electoral Commission, the IEBC, just tweeted a few minutes ago that the elections would be moved from October 17th to October 26th.
That's VOA's East Africa correspondent Jill Craig. Full details coming up.
Also, the presidents of several African countries are expected to address the UN General Assembly today.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
After election results were nullified and deemed irregular last month, Kenya has pushed back fresh presidential elections until October 26th. The rerun election had been initially scheduled for October 17th, but the opposition party had pushed for a later date. The Constitution dictates the poll take place within 60 days of the Supreme Court's ruling, which is October 31st. VOA East Africa correspondent Jill Craig is following developments and has the latest for us from Nairobi.
The Electoral Commission, the IEBC, just tweeted a few minutes ago that the elections would be moved from October 17th to October 26th. And they said in the tweet that this is because after the Supreme Court's full judgment came out yesterday, which outlined the things that it said went wrong in the transmission of results during the August 8th elections, they had to move these elections in order to allow enough time to get their ducks in line, so to speak.
What has been the reaction from the president?
Well, President Kenyatta gave some remarks right before the IEBC made this announcement. And in this remarks, he obviously is not pleased with the court's decision. He said that he was declared the winner by a significant margin. He questioned why the judges made this decision because he says that there was not a proper scrutiny or verifications of the forms that took place. But he also said, you know, that he would comply with the judgment, but he felt that it was the constitutional right of Kenyans to elect their leaders of choice and that that was non-negotiable. So clearly, he's not pleased with the ruling from the court, but he has said that he will abide by it.
So far, what has been the opposition's take on all of this?
The opposition has said throughout that if the IEBC does not replace the commissioners, that they will boycott the elections. And so it's too soon to tell at this point, given that the new election date was just announced just a few moments ago. But I can say that Mr. Odinga and the NASA coalition opposition have said consistently that their demands were not made. And the biggest part of those demands are having the IEBC commissioners replaced. If those demands are not made, that they would boycott the elections. This is problematic, because the Constitution says that new elections must take place within 60 days of the original ruling. So the original ruling was made on September 1st. What we got yesterday was the full judgment, so basically sort of filling in the details on that original ruling. But regardless, it is 60 days from September 1st, which leaves us at October 31st, and the new elections have just been called for October 26th. So essentially right now what we're waiting for is to find out what the opposition response is and if they are more willing to work with the IEBC and with the ruling party, with some of their concerns regarding the makeup of the commission.
That was VOA East Africa correspondent Jill Craig. She spoke with me from Nairobi.
The presidents of several African countries are expected to address the UN General Assembly today. This morning, the group was addressed by the president of Burkina Faso, Roch Marc Christian Kabore. Speaking through a translator, he said his country supports efforts to end conflicts across Africa.
Seeking peace is our basic goal, and there are a number of hotbeds of tension in Africa. We welcome recent political progress in Mali, but this situation in the north of the country is still volatile. On 5 September last, the Security Council imposed sanctions on the request of the Malian government, and we trust this will help to ensure implementation of the peace agreement. We call on all forces in Mali, the National Army, MINUSMA, Barkhane, and the Sahel G5 force to work together, sharing intelligence, and to coordinate so as to bring back peace to the region as soon as possible. We have to work hard to ensure settlements are found in Libya, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, the Central African Republic, Somalia, Southern Sudan, Burundi. We call on the parties to focus on dialogue and reconciliation, for they have to understand that they are the primary parties responsible and they are the only ones that can build peace in their countries. On Western Sahara, we call for dialogue and negotiation in a spirit of compromise with a view to a realistic political settlement of that dispute.
He also said his own country is making progress in democratization and good governance.
Burkina Faso is committed to economic takeoff. We are carrying out major structural reforms, and one of our goals is to attract, facilitate, and encourage investment. In order to strengthen participatory democracy and putting our citizens at the very heart of our work in the state, in 2016 we joined the Open Government Partnership and our first national action plan is now being prepared. We will be combating corruption and working towards good governance, and we will be working with non-state actors, civil society and the media. At the same time, we are working to strengthen democracy and to strengthen our institutions. We have a draft constitution now. This will be submitted to a referendum. The judiciary is working independently, dealing with political and economic disputes and crimes that have stymied our efforts at national reconciliation for decades now. Terrorist and obscurantist forces have been targeting our country for some time now, and we are fully aware of how they are seeking to destabilize the country and indeed the region. Combating terrorism is thus a national priority, but it can be successful only if we approach it at a sub-regional level and with a focus on economic development in the most vulnerable areas. And so we give special attention to the northern part of our country, where we have achieved some success, but we need an investment program, which we recently adopted, in order to make our people less vulnerable, particularly young people and women.
That was the president of Burkina Faso, Roch Marc Christian Kabore, addressing the UN General Assembly today.
President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, Africa's first woman head of state, bid farewell at the UN General Assembly in New York yesterday. Her appearance marked the historic closing of one of the high points of her presidency, a much-heralded foreign policy. In an exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Cloete, the Liberian head of state discusses her legacy.
Our Elections Commission have already established their credibility in three by-elections that have taken place in which the citizens accepted there were no major complaints. The international community, including all the observers to those elections, accepted that and said they were credible. And I expect this election commission, having already got that experience, although this is a bigger election this time because it's got all the 73 seats of the legislature at place, but I still think that they've done very well, and they've had a strong relationship coordination with all the political parties. They had a mechanism that allowed communication to be able to sort out any concerns and issues. Right now, I believe the political parties are quite pleased with the progress, you know, of the Elections Commission and the capability. So I think we're going to have a good election.
President Johnson Sirleaf also spoke more on her legacy.
The legacy of having taken a destroyed country, give it peace, maintain peace for over, if we include the interim period, over 15 consecutive years, as compared with 30 years of conflict, of war, of destruction. And in the process, on the basis of that peace, restored basic services to the Liberian people, those services missing over many years, you know, built the institutions that were largely dysfunctional over many years. I'd like to say it's a great legacy.
That was Liberia's President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf speaking in an exclusive interview with VOA's Peter Cloete at the UN General Assembly in New York. Leaders from 15 countries in sub-Saharan Africa are meeting in Zanzibar this week with national representatives of the World Health Organization to assess a major project underway to improve access to essential medicines. The WHO says medical treatment falls apart when national health systems struggle to provide essential medicines. They found that half of all reports of substandard and counterfeit drugs come from sub-Saharan Africa. Three-quarters of these are essential medicines such as antimalarial and antibiotics. The project aims to fix prices in the private sector so they are affordable, and it is working to improve techniques for detecting fake drugs on the market. Dr. Suzanne Hill is WHO's Director of Essential Medicines and Health Products Department. She spoke with me about the successful efforts of the project and what lies ahead.
So this is about increasing access to essential medicines for all. Under the Sustainable Development Goals, as you know, Target 3.8 is about ensuring all patients in the communities everywhere have access to essential medicines and vaccines of good quality. So that's what this work is about.
Why are counterfeit and substandard drugs such a big problem in sub-Saharan Africa?
Even though it's a problem globally, what we see is in markets in Africa, there seems to be more penetration of substandard and falsified products into the supply chain, which means that patients at the end of the line who are trying to get a good quality medicine don't know whether what they're getting is substandard or falsified or not.
Where are they getting these types of drugs from?
That's a good question. Different types of products seem to come from different sources. And it is a global problem. So sometimes if a manufacturing problem occurs, say, in one of the big manufacturing countries, whether that would be Bangladesh or India or China, because the medicine market is a global market, that can result in problems in Africa, but also in Latin America. And we have examples of just that situation.
What type of success have you had in the detection of these types of drugs?
For the last 4 or 5 years, we've been working very closely with national medicines regulators to upskill their capacity to actually detect, respond, and preferably prevent the problem of falsified medicines. I think 124 countries have been trained in how to report problems with substandard and falsified medicines. And then here in Tanzania, for example, we have a pilot project running with the National Food and Drugs Authority for a mobile phone app-based detection system so that health practitioners can report suspect products to the regulatory authorities here.
Another big area that you all have been working on, and that's fixing prices so that they are affordable for people to be able to obtain the medicine that they need. Tell us about some of the success that you're having in this area.
One of the big things we see in Africa, perhaps compared with high-income countries, is that very few countries actually have legislation in place that allows them to control the price that's finally charged to the patient. And that's a particular problem in the private sector where people are relying on having to pay out of pocket for payments when there's no insurance coverage. So two countries, Mali and Burundi, have managed to introduce legislation that controls prices. And this kind of legislation is found in just about every high-income country I can think of. And what we're seeing is that starting to have an impact on affordability for patients. But I think there's a lot more to do on that topic so that we actually have to understand what does it really cost to make a medicine that is good quality. And then once we understand that, what can we do to make sure that along the supply chain, the markups don't get too out of control?
What types of medicines have you all been focusing on?
We focus initially in these countries on what are called essential medicines. These are medicines that WHO defines as being essential for having available in supply at all times for all patients to treat the diseases that are prevalent in the community. So what we see here in Africa, for example, that's sometimes medicines for malaria or for neglected tropical diseases, but it's also medicines for the non-communicable diseases such as diabetes or cardiovascular disease.
Looking ahead, how will this work continue?
At the moment, we're evaluating what we've been able to learn and what we've been able to achieve in these countries. And we see that, you know, we continue to need to work in partnership with these countries and others to support the development of strong health systems and pharmaceutical systems in particular to improve access to medicine. So we'll be continuing to work on making sure there are good quality generic products on the market, for example, making sure that the policies that a government puts in place support access to those generic medicines where appropriate, and also making sure that things like the monitoring of safety and quality in the market are up to scratch and sophisticated and allow for identification of problems that need to be resolved.
That was Dr. Suzanne Hill, WHO's Director of Essential Medicines and Health Products Department. She spoke with me from Zanzibar, Tanzania.
Cameroon has come under new fire from human rights groups. Today, Human Rights Watch said that since 2015, Cameroon's military has forcibly pushed 100,000 people who had fled Boko Haram back to Nigeria. The group accuses the military of denying refugees adequate food and health care and of physically abusing and raping many. Also today, three rights groups called on Cameroon authorities to drop charges against three young men arrested for sharing a joke about Boko Haram. Amnesty International, the Network of Human Rights Defenders in Central Africa, and Human Rights Watch say the students merely shared a sarcastic text and do not deserve their 10-year prison sentences. These statements by rights group follow a committee to protect journalists report yesterday, accusing Cameroon of using anti-terror laws to silence critics and suppress dissent. The government denied those allegations.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Swuhib, 22 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The rerun election in Kenya, which had been initially scheduled for October 17th, has now been pushed to October 26. The presidents of several African countries are expected to address UN General Assembly today. And Cameroon has come under new fire for human rights groups. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
In more news around the continent, a new agreement between generic drug makers, the UN AIDS Organization, the Gates Foundation, the health charity UNITAID, and other groups will dramatically cut prices of AIDS drugs for 92 developing countries. The agreement was announced today at the United Nations General Assembly gathering. The plan will supply drugs to treat HIV/AIDS for $75 a year per patient. The program starts in Africa, where the HIV/AIDS epidemic has been hardest hit. The Gates Foundation will guarantee funds to buy millions of pills from two drug makers, Aurobindo Pharma and Mylan Laboratories. Because of the high volume of sales, the companies will be able to lower prices.
The storm of the century hit Puerto Rico yesterday with howling winds and heavy rainfall, knocking off power and causing floods across the island. On its way to Puerto Rico, Hurricane Maria ravaged several Caribbean islands and killed at least 9 people. It is expected to pass by the Dominican Republic today. VOA's Latika Hoke has more.
The eye of Hurricane Maria is expected to skirt the northern and eastern coast of the Dominican Republic, sparing the island state from the worst. but the officials say they are not taking the monster storm lightly.
It is going to affect the whole territory. First, it'll be felt as a hurricane in some zones, like the one seen in red. But in other places, it will be felt like a tropical storm, and in others like a depression. There will be rain in the whole country, and the danger of that is that the ground is saturated.
It was much worse for Puerto Rico, which was hit by the eye of the storm Wednesday. Maria was the strongest hurricane in Puerto Rico since 1928. It flooded the capital, San Juan, and forced thousands of people to seek shelter.
Yes, this is absolutely the worst hurricane experience I've had. We've lived in Puerto Rico for about the last 30 years, so we have experienced some.
I rode it out here in the hotel, a very safe hotel, but it was very loud. We heard a lot of glass breaking. We heard the waves or water hitting against the window.
Hurricane Maria and partly Irma before it caused substantial damage to the island already struggling with economic problems. U.S. President Donald Trump has issued state of emergency declarations for Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands. Maria is the third powerful hurricane to hit the United States in the past 3 weeks. The devastation caused by the storms is expected to halt the U.S. economic growth for some time.
In the third quarter, however, economic growth will be held down by the severe disruptions caused by hurricanes Harvey, Irma, and Maria. As activity resumes and rebuilding gets underway, growth likely will bounce back.
The hurricane season is not over yet either. Another one, Jose, is moving north along the U.S. Atlantic coast, and while staying over the ocean, it is creating strong waves that may result in flooding. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanov, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
This is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.